Which podcast was this? Was this whatchamacallit? The Opinions? Did I watch the new Spider-Man movie? I have not seen new Spider-Man yet. I have not seen The Odyssey yet. I am behind on my movie going. I believe I'm going to see The Odyssey next week with a friend of mine and his partner. I have not read the Emily Wilson review, and to be honest, I don't care all that much about it. Emily Wilson is a fine and wonderful scholar. I have her translations of the Odyssey and the Iliad, but she's not a movie critic. So, lots of respect for her, but she's not a movie critic. And so it's sort of like, do I want to hear an academic nitpick about a movie? Not really. I don't care. Hey, Pat. What's up? What games that have I played that have released more recently? I have read a review. Did I say I didn't read a review? I have read a review. But I think... Okay, here's the thing. Criticism, movie, like film criticism, is an actual, like, skill. It's like an actual thing, right? Like, it's a thing that you... There's a... Cinema has its own language. It has its own, you know, tropes, assumptions. Like, all there's, like, there's theory of cinema. There's all this stuff, right? That is part of understanding movies. And my read of at least Wilson's first take on the Odyssey film is that she entirely based her critique on the script. And that's an insane way to judge a film, because cinema is a visual medium, right? Like, meaning is communicated through visual means, through the acting, through choices of lighting, blocking, through costuming. Like, all these little decisions help communicate the meaning. And so it's sort of like, the review was interesting just to see what, like, an academic says about the movie. But, like, this is a person who fundamentally doesn't get cinema and doesn't take action cinema seriously as a form. And I just, like, I don't care. I just don't care what that person thing has to say about a movie. Again, interesting to see her sense of, like, you know, maybe how she would adapt the Odyssey, but, like, I just don't care that much about her take on the movie. And I do think it's kind of strange that everyone's like, Wilson's judgment is definitive. It's like, no, this is just another person with a take on a movie. And I think her expertise gives her some authority when it comes to sort of, like, making claims about the text, the Odyssey. But I do not think that authority necessarily translates into good criticism. Gloomy Gus, Jamel plays Street Fighter 6 Challenge. I'm bad at fighting games. Or rather, the moment I was good at fighting games, I was, like, 15 and had a lot of time to get good at fighting games. And the fighting games, I was quite good at Virtua Fighter 4 back in the day, and Tekken. So yes, I'm playing Fire Emblem the Sacred Stones. I'm playing this one because it's, you know, it's easy to emulate on a Game Boy Advance emulator. My favorite Fire Emblem. I don't know if I have an answer for that, to be perfectly honest with you. Let's see here. If I could go back to college and study something different, what would it be? Did you get as much value out of college as you wanted? I feel like I got a ton of value out of college personally. I studied a lot of political theory. If I could go back and study anything, you know, I took Latin, and I would probably go back and do classical political philosophy. So I'm not caught up with like fan opinion. Do people not like the Sacred Stones? Because Nicholas exclaimed that he was shocked that I was a Sacred Stones defender. Have I ever played Pikmin? I did play the first Pikmin way back when. Am I going to play Fortune's... just to be clear to everyone, I got the Twitch stream going on. I have the YouTube stream and the TikTok stream, so I'm answering questions from a lot of different places. And Branch Theridian, great name, asks, how do you decide what to write? For example, American history versus punditry. I mean, I think I mostly write about American history and like a kind of deep analysis of American politics by way of American history. And that is in large part because I care a lot about American history and I read a lot of American history. So that shapes what I write about. If I find something that I can, happening in the world that I can relate to U.S. history or that can use U.S. history to inform it, that's what I write about. It's for books to recommend to someone who wants to learn more about political theory, philosophy, or history. Like, it just depends on the subject, right? Like, there's not, you know, people ask me about books and they're always asking me about sort of like general purpose books or general theory books. I'm not really sure that I have any recommendations for those. Like, I tend to read very subject specific. So if there's a particular subject, era, right, whatever, then I would recommend that. For political theory, I mean, yeah, it's kind of like, what do you want to tackle? You want to tackle like modern political theory? Honestly, at your local community college, find the class on political theory, find the syllabus, and start making your way through the syllabus. Ever played Into the Breach? I feel like you would enjoy it if you play all these tactics games. I have never played Into the Breach. I do feel like I'd enjoyed it. Someone asked me what else I've been playing. And basically, I'm just trying to 100% mean to the Hollower. That's my current goal. 100%ing Mina the Hollower. Not much of a board gamer. I do think I'd enjoy it. Mina, very, the first 2 hours of Mina the Hollower are incredibly difficult, I gotta say. I feel like that game really is a real sort of like you gotta stick with it through those first two hours. But if you can do that, you're in for a treat. It's a lot of fun. Sorry, brief pause there. S. Dudley asks, has your increase in YouTube videos been part of the decrease in Blue Sky posting? Not really. I just made a choice to stop posting on Blue Sky. I'll probably return to it at a certain point. I'm just like taking a break. I think what happened, I said this on the Patreon stream for my podcast, actually. I said this on a stream, but I like just signed on the Blue Sky a couple Saturdays ago just to like sign on, and I immediately was hit with discourse about myself, and I hadn't said anything or written anything or done anything. People were just like discoursing about me as if like I'm not an actual human being who exists, but just like a topic to discuss. And I was like, you know what? I don't need to be here. I don't need to engage in this. And over the summer, there had been over the summer, I asked someone some thoughts about housing, and it resulted in like a bunch of people accusing me of being a sellout and a token and a fraud. So I just was like, you know, I'm not into it right now. I'm not into Blue Sky. What were they saying? Was it mean? It wasn't mean. It was just sort of like the experience of people having discourse about you, again, as if you're like a topic, like an issue. It's super strange. I think originally someone had accused me of being a huge Platinum supporter, which isn't the case. I think, you know, as a social network, I think Blue Sky, of course, has a bunch of promise. But its initial, being populated basically initially with, like, the most, like, a lot of very, a lot of very insufferable Twitter refugees. And then, you know, a bunch of just insane people. has shaped the culture in a bad way. Hill's a goal. Typical establishment. Damn. Oh, I see. This is a joke. Yeah. Do I have it taken all those videos to depict that, appearing to depict the president shitting in public? I've been wondering what you make of it. To me, it definitely seems like he's just shitting himself. I think he's probably shitting himself. Over at TikTok, someone says, you're my favorite writer at the MIT. I'm not trolling. I love your articles. Thank you very much. I very much appreciate that. No, it's very funny. I put this. I'm not like a communist or anything, but like I think I'm pretty straightforwardly sort of like a social democrat, right? Like straight democrat. You could say democratic socialist. You could say liberal socialist. Like I think I'm quite straightforwardly that, and that it's very easy to pick up from my writing that I am that, from like the language that I use, the arguments that I make. Like the whole nine yards. Like my politics are not that mysterious. But one interesting thing, right, is that a lot of people don't actually figure out someone's politics by what they say. They figure it out by basically sort of like affiliation. Theo, Chris, you're a neocon on Blue Sky, right? Like, so on Blue Sky, because I work at the New York Times, first people have this idea that the Times is like a hive mind, that everyone believes all the same things. But second of all, just like being at the New York Times necessarily means that I must be, you know, adjacent to a right winger or a neolib, whatever you want to say. This discourse earlier this summer, there was, you know, a bunch of the things were like, well, he works at the New York Times, he must be their token black who writes about race. And it's like, well, you know, first of all, there are other black people at the New York Times. Second of all, I actually don't really write about race at all. But like, it's just like, that's the assumption, you know, that's sort of the fact that I work there thus governs everything, you must know about me in that case. It's funny. I mean, it's funny to be someone who is constantly putting out my views, right? Like, Jack XK asks, 100,000 subscriber cap collection, but that's not a bad idea. You know, if I had like a thing that, you know, you had to pay to join, I might do that. But yeah, that's not a bad. Maybe I'll do it. Yeah, maybe I'll do the cap video. But you know, I have this YouTube page that's recently gotten to over 100,000 subscribers. I have the TikTok page that has like 300,000 followers. The Blue Sky. I have a lot of places in addition to the Times where I'm saying the things that I think. And one of the strangest things is how much it just does not matter to people's assessment of me. people will be. I've been told that I don't write about billionaires, and that I am fine with income inequality. People have said that about me, and it's like. And it's like, I don't think that's true. So I don't have any particular, I do not have any commitment to like a particular vision of how things work. I'm much more of a what can we accomplish, right? Like, can we begin to open space for sort of non-market alternatives to things? Can we increase public provisioning? Like, whatever. I'm very, my ethos when it comes to policy is like very much like, one should experiment, one should not get locked in to particular things, one should, your true north should be the actual material goal for people. Someone said earlier, I forgot who said it, that people are obsessed with labels at Blue Sky. I think people are obsessed with labels everywhere, and I'm just not obsessed with labels. Like, I just, you know, again, I state my views everywhere. My views are my views. I'm not shy about them. And people can label me as they would. But like, I think the obsession with labels kind of short-circuit serious thinking. Someone had asked earlier about why the United States never got universal health care. I mean, the very, very short answer is that there was an attempt at it. There was an attempt through the 40s and 50s. But after political failure in the 50s under Truman, you know, unions began bargaining for expansive healthcare benefits. At the time, healthcare was quite cheap, and so employers were happy to give them those benefits as a way of like pacifying unions. And we got, basically through this dynamic, we get locked into this employer-based system. And by the time there might be political will or desire to do anything, it's been 50 years or 30, 40 years of path dependence, and it's very hard to break out of path dependence. It's the reason why where there has been expansion to public provisioning of health insurance, it's been for populations that are just left out of private insurance. And this is where my pragmatism comes in, right? Like, I want universal coverage. Do I think that it is politically feasible to just in one fell swoop do Medicare for all? I don't know. I don't know if that is. I think it's a real high risk strategy. But I do think that there's probably a lower barrier to just like expanding existing programs to cover people left out by private insurance. And that I think for me, the goal is we have to get the universal coverage, and we should get the universal coverage through public provisioning, because that's going to be the most efficient way to do it. But I don't necessarily think that one has to destroy the existing system. I think you just got to get the universal coverage. And yeah, so I'm not like anti-Medicare for all, but I'm also, if someone's like, we want to expand Medicaid to cover children, I'm not going to be like, well, that's a sellout shill thing. It's like, no, that helps accomplish the goal. And my whole big thing is like, how can we accomplish the goal? You know, Bill the Cat, insurance companies certainly spend millions to lobby influencer politics, but this is maybe like one of my very unpopular opinions about lobbying in general. You take away that lobbying money, it's still a very difficult lift to do any kind of big public expansion of health insurance for reasons regarding American suspicion of public programs in general, and it's just racism, for reasons regarding path dependence, loss aversion, all these things, right? Like, doctors don't want it, right? Like, you know, the only way you'd be able to make universal healthcare affordable is by lowering doctor pay. It's why the AMA has been a consistent opponent, not just of any public health insurance program, but just even training more doctors or allowing doctors in via the immigration system. Like, one thing I do think that political discourse misses is the fact that people have this feel. I mean, here's where I'm like, yeah, I'm like a left winger who's like read a lot of Marx. People have like material interest, and that doesn't just mean wealth and money. It means status. It means stability. There are all these things that are deeply material that shape how people's ideology, their beliefs, but also shape their incentive structure and what they want to do and what they support and what they oppose. And it's all, they're not always obvious. And I think you have to like really grapple with that. You have to grapple with the fact that like not everyone disagrees with you because they've been misled or they've been propagandized. Some people just like have a different worldview. This isn't like an excuse, it's just sort of like you gotta really take that stuff seriously. I gotta play this game. I'm playing this game on the highest difficulty level, so the computer's very aggressive. Yeah, over at TikTok, Nate Dago quotes Deng Xiaoping. One said it doesn't matter if a cat is black or white so long as it catches mice. That's very much how I think of things. Have I ever 1 2 3 4 dot 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 1234 asks, have I ever played Advance Wars? Have I ever played Advance Wars? Do you mean to ask, have I devoted many, many hours of my life to Advance Wars? Yes, I have. I tend to use either Sammy, just because you can get headquarter capture victory very quickly if you like know what you're doing with Sammy. Max is great. I do like just brute forcing my way through. I'm very Orange Star. But if I'm not doing Sammy or Max, then I tend to go Grit. Death's Head. Honestly, people are obsessed with apocalypticism. There must be one final confrontation. All that is wicked. And the reality is that this is all very complicated with multiple viewpoints and philosophies jockeying for position. I think that's exactly right. And it's funny. I mean, when I went to UVA, shout out Wahoo, and one of the things, I took a lot of, my minor is in religious studies, and I took basically enough classes to do a major in religious studies as well. It was a political and social thought was my major, as was government, and religion was the other set of coursework I took. And I studied American religious traditions, and one thing I'm 100% convinced of, that this is sort of a fundamentally Protestant country, and in particular, it's very Puritan, and it's very caught up in kind of this sounds obvious, but like kind of evangelical traditions, but that's much broader than just conservative evangelicals today. I'm thinking like Second Great Awakening kind of thing. In any case, there's like this long-standing strain of American apocalypticism, and you see it everywhere. Like, I think it's very much part of the American character, and I think a lot of people just want some final victory, some final battle. The idea that like history will not end, there will not be a final victory, there will not be a steady state, that other people actually do believe things as fervently as you do, and they're often diametrically opposed, that politics is an unending game, that there are no permanent wins or no permanent losses, like all this stuff, the fundamental impermanence of human existence in a political life is deeply unsatisfying. And yeah, it just is. Yeah, about universal healthcare, there's a recent econ paper about this. The AMA spent a lot of money basically doing a fear campaign about private insurance. Yes. Doctors groups. On a less serious note, how did I become friends with the Doughboys? I don't know. Would I call myself friends with them? It basically what happened. I don't know why I did that, but whatever. Hey, what is the victory condition here? Oh yeah, air, okay, there we go. Alright. Am I playing this because the new Fire Emblem's coming out? Yeah, kinda. You know, here's something embarrassing. I have the Three Houses on my Switch. I played it for an hour and never went back to it. But I probably should go back to the Three Houses at some point. Is this political environment more akin to 2006 than we think? I gotta answer the Doughboys question. So, I've been a listener for like a year, and they were doing a show in DC, and I just like messaged, and like, you know, at that point I'm working for Slate, and I'm not unknown, relatively decently known political writer. And so I kind of just I messaged Nick. I'm like, hey, Weigard, I big fan of the show, long time listener, first time caller. You guys are going to be doing a show in DC. I'd love to join you if that'd be possible. And they were totally game for it. And that kind of began a kind of almost at this point annual kind of I'm on Doughboys deal. If I'm in LA, like next time I'm in LA, if I know, I'm going to like reach out to them, see if we can't figure something out. But that's basically how it began. Petrol Bomb makes a great point. It's easy to hate big corporations, but are Americans brave enough to hate doctors, small business owners, farmers, and homeowners? Yeah. Someone asked me over at TikTok, do you ever think about doing reported pieces? I do reporting, even for my columns. I do reporting. I talk to people. Occasionally, I do want to go out somewhere and report. I probably do some of that for the midterms. And I'm always doing research. Like, my columns, if someone's saying over at the YouTube or the Twitch or whatever, someone's saying that the paywalls may be the reason people don't really consume my writing. My writing is not just me doing mindless takes, right? Like, it is deeply in research and informed by research. But my gaming agenda right now is to 100% Mina, and then I think I'm gonna do Fire Emblem Three Houses. And then what's the second Fire Emblem game for Switch? And then I'll get to the new one. Someone's asking me what I think AOC should run for. My view is that if AOC wants to be president, she should run for president. I think the whole they should run for Senate, they should, yeah. If it's the kind of thing where it's like you have to strike when the iron's hot. If you do not strike when the iron's hot, then you're out of luck. The idea that you need to sort of like work your way up is just like not the case. So if AOC feels that like the best use of her time is to just run now, she should do it because she may not get another chance. And yeah, S. Dudley asked if I thought that 2006 was, if this moment was reminiscent of 2006. It very much is. It's like 2006, except we're like closer to being in hell. But the basic dynamics, I think, are very similar. A Republican president wins a second term by an extraordinarily narrow margin, reads it as a grand ideological mandate, crashes and burns, trying to fulfill that ideological mandate. Republican Party is, you know, arrogant and beset by scandal, including lots of weird sex scandals and abuse scandals. Democrats enjoy a very strong national environment. I mean, Obama is out of the game by choice. Obama could get back into the game if he wanted to. Like, that's his choice. I think people need more experience than just the House to be president, in my opinion. I don't know, Abraham Lincoln, the only office Abraham Lincoln held prior to being president of the United States was a single term in the House of Representatives. I take that back, and a couple terms in the Illinois State House. Otherwise, his big political thing is he was just like a big political sicko and a party builder. But like he wasn't a senator, wasn't a governor. Stephen Douglas, certainly highly experienced, but Lincoln, not so much. Do I think... I'm not saying AOC would not get another chance. I'm just saying there's no way to know if she would, right? MC Ultra's asking me if I like modern video games at all. And I do. Like I said, I'm playing Mina. I switch games. I gotta get the Star Fox remake. I guess it's not a modern game, but... how real do you think Blexit Senate polling is this year? I think it's very real. I know people have gotten, you know, bitten and burned by trying to flip Texas, but one thing that's striking about this year is that Tallarico has not trailed Paxton yet in a poll. Not trailed yet. So, yeah. Peter Anteater, I would retire and do the lecture circuit. Listen, a former president on the lecture circuit does not get paid $20,000. Bump that up times 10. To be candid with you guys, if I don't speak at... I only speak at colleges and universities, the occasional nonprofit, but mainly just colleges and universities. I don't do private or profit seeking anything when I speak. But if I did, I could very easily clear like 20 grand myself. That's not a trouble, and I'm just a guy. Mr. NYC81, polls don't vote. Yeah, that's a cliche. Polls don't vote. But polls remain our most reliable way to get a sense of what an electorate thinks. And the polls don't mean Tallarico's going to win. The polls suggest that the race is in his favor. I don't think you want SCOTUS running re-election campaigns. I mean, even as someone who wants more politicians on SCOTUS, I don't think that's a good idea. Someone's asking, okay, two things. Am I a polymarket doomer? I don't know what that means. I know what polymarket is, but what makes one a polymarket doomer? Second, what happened with the polling in Michigan? Typical polling error in a primary race is about 13 or 14 points. So nothing really happened. There was just typical error for a primary. Yeah, that's all that happened. Yeah. Isn't two-term presidents leaving the stage one of our norms? Kind of, not really. It's become a weird norm, but like, you know, okay, so Obama basically, you know, called it quits, and Biden has too. Bush did, but everyone hated him. Clinton kind of didn't. He's still in the game, not running for office, but still very much in the game. HW, not so much. Reagan, his brain had leaked out of his ears by that point. Carter, famously got into humanitarian work. Ford kind of got out of the game. Nixon, you know, left in disgrace. But if Nixon hadn't left in disgrace, he would have been in the game the entire time. Someone's asking, can the DSA remake the Dem Party? I might write about this next week, but I think so. First of all, DSA isn't like the Democratic Party is very large. There are a lot of people, and DSA's impressive primary wins, right? Like in various places, does not constitute it sort of like taking over anytime soon. But there is something interesting there, and that is that, how do I put this? One of the reasons Republicans have been so effective in winning elections against Democrats, not as effective as people think, I mean, they still lose quite a bit, but like very relatively effective, is not simply like, you know, conservative media or whatever, but that like the coalitions that stitch together the Republican Party have like strong associational life. What I mean by that is that like, you know, the evangelical, white conservative evangelical churches aren't just sort of these like institutions that people go to. They are kinds of political associations that foster deep ties and acculturate people into like a habit of Republican voting. And there's lots of that stuff on the Republican side, lots of associational life. There's very little of that on the Democratic side. Unions are in terminal decline. The one part of the Democratic coalition that is quite robust in this way is Black Americans because of the church. But by and large, Democrats don't have this. What's interesting about DSA to me is that it's like a classic kind of association, right? Like it's not so much a political party. It's a political association, fosters deep ties, keeps people mobilized on a year-round basis. And it's noteworthy, right, that Democrats have a hard time beating right-wingers whose political bases are in these associations, and apparently have a hard time beating left-wingers as well who have the same basis. And like the weakness of the Democratic Party is the lack of any grounding associational life. And so the influence I think DSA might have is just to reveal this, to make this plain, that what beats Democrats is being able to ground your politics in sort of like basically a movement. And if people feel that they are part of a movement, it's very difficult to persuade them with sort of like kitchen table issues or, you know, the other side's bad. And so what I think all this might do is impress upon establishment Democrats that they have to find something like that. They have to begin rebuilding political associations within the Democratic Party in order to foster these kind of deeper ties. Are we afraid of a nail biter in Texas? Like if Tallarico wins by a hair and it gets overturned somehow? I don't know. You cross that bridge when you come to it. This is really just my own like brain chemistry. I am not of the type who like worries about scenarios like that, who says, well, what if, and 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 what if, right? Like, what if this, right? Like, what if that? You can't, that stuff you can't predict, right? You can maybe prepare, you can like, you know, get your ducks in a row, but you have to stop so much thinking about what might come and think about what is now. What is happening now? What can we do now? There's that famous, there's two famous Grant quotes, U.S. Grant, that relate to this. One, and I don't have the exact wording on either. One is, he's like, there's always more men before you count. Always more men before you count. Which is just a way of saying, your brain, you can imagine all kinds of doom. You can imagine all kinds of obstacles. And you can't, like, you have to actually get an objective sense of what is happening around you before you begin to make your judgments. And the other thing, this is during the Wilderness campaign, and Grant says to a battlefield commander, he's like, listen, the way you speak about Lee, you think he's going to backflip and somersault right behind our lines. How about you stop thinking about what Lee is going to do and start thinking about what you can do? And that's just my attitude towards so many things. You cannot get preoccupied with what might happen. You can't do it. You have to just worry about what you can do in the moment. My biggest beef here is that no one can agree on what socialism means, what the right and left makes everything confusing. I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters. Just a label. I challenge the idea that DSA politics is like fundamentally illiberal. There are certainly people with illiberal ideologies within DSA, but there are lots of people in DSA, including some of the most prominent DSA elected officials, who are basically just New Deal Democrats. maybe a dumb question. No such thing as a dumb question. I mean, if there is, I'm not going to tell you it's dumb. Because I'm nice. I'm friendly enough. Maybe a dumb question, but is Trump going to try for a third term? I think he is. He demands attention, bottomless attention. So I don't know. He is talking like he knows he's going to be succeeded by someone, but I have a feeling that in the breach, he's not going to let go. He's not going to let go. He wants the attention. So TikTok is asking, do school vouchers make you rethink your stance on means testing? Why would they? I think school vouchers are bad. Like, I don't understand the question. I think school vouchers are bad. I think they should not exist. I think allowing people to essentially rob the public school system of money to send their kids to selective private schools that have no obligation to educate all students is bad. I think we should be making massive investments in public schools and public schooling. I attended public schools my entire life. My kids will attend public schools their entire lives. I think school vouchers are a giveaway to affluent people. That's what they are. They're a giveaway to people with a lot of money. Being that people hate to admit in the culture, but often public schools are the best schools. That is absolutely correct. I mean, the thing, as someone who has, again, children in a public schools, I live in Charlottesville, but like it's, people think Charlottesville is like this extremely tony place where everyone is like super affluent. That is not the case. My kids go to a public school where, you know, many of the students are on free and reduced lunch. Many of the students are refugees from other countries. The district includes like a large part of the city's public housing. Like, my kids go to a very racially and economically diverse public school, and they get a great education. They get a wonderful education, and that the quality of their education does not show up in the test scores that certain parents are obsessed with. Someone says, I will never understand how people play games with graphics this bad. These aren't bad graphics. These are good graphics. I don't understand the question. Oh, it took too long. Have I read Lord of the Rings? Yes, I have. If you watch my YouTube channel, you would know this. You should watch my YouTube. Let's see. I'm giving you a hard time. If you've been struggling to score your bread, there's not enough tension on the surface, and so you wanna I don't know how you fix it if you're doing a no knead bread, but that's the problem, not enough surface tension. What should I do a video about next, guys? I have one on deck. I haven't recorded or anything, but like it's jiggling around my brain. But like, what do you guys think I should do a video on? Given what I do videos on, what should you think I should do one on? When I see The Odyssey, I will eventually do a video on my, give you my Chris Nolan take. I like Chris Nolan, so it's not going to be like, Chris Nolan sucks. But I have a take on Chris Nolan, and I'll share it with you in a video. There's not really much to say about how the Whigs fell apart, basically. Slavery tore the party apart, internal tensions over slavery, and the fact that they lost all the time. Taxi Driver in 35mm, that's so exciting. I appreciate the suggestions. These are a little too broad. You know, I mean, yeah, I'm not doing 40-minute videos. I'm doing kind of, you know, 10 minutes, right? So it's sort of very, very specific, very targeted, very focused. If depending on how the midterms go, if the midterms go the way I think they're going to do, I will do a column that's just sort of like, this was 2006. Whenever I see a boy kibble video, I get irrationally angry. Learn how to cook like an adult. I hate that. This is off topic, but I'm at a family reunion in Charlotte this weekend. Any must try restaurant recommendations? Tomorrow morning, you need to go to either Mary Bette or Cuckoo Rishu and get yourself a croissant. We have wonderful French bakeries in town. My personal bakery of choice is Albemarle Baking Company, but I don't want to have to stand in line any longer than I need to tomorrow, so don't go there. But if you go to there, you may run into me. But we have wonderful French bakeries. Marie Bette has something called a croissant, like a pretzel croissant. It's utterly decadent, and I highly recommend it. And Cuckoo Rishu, last time I was there, had a French onion croissant, which I thought was delicious. So you got to go to one of our French bakeries. One of my favorite meals in town is at a kind of Latin American chicken place called Al Carbon, and for like $20 you can get like a half chicken and like some delicious sides, and it's gonna be a wonderful meal, and I really recommend that. Because that's like based in a shopping center. If you want something that's like very Charlottesville feeling, let me think. I always have a hard time thinking, like, where do I go get stuff? I'm always cooking at home. My other favorite lunch place to get is Botanical, which is a vegan cafe, but their food's terrific. So, I highly recommend Botanical for lunch. Or if you want something that's like, it's like hot and everything. So if you go to Hogwaller Brewing, they do a really great cheeseburger there, and their beers are pretty decent. I like Cardinal Hall Brewing as well for like beer food combination. And Beer Run is another one of these places that's good for like a lunch. For dinner, if you're me, I might go to Bizou on the mall. I might go to Petit Pois on the mall. I might go to Peter Chang's China Grill, which is like out in the county. I might go to Pad Thai, which is next to Beer Run, which is just run by like a husband and wife couple. It's great. Yeah, it's a good food town. You won't go wrong. Joining late, but watch one of your recent vids where you were wearing a retro Amtrak hat. Did you sew the patches on yourself, or did you buy it from somewhere? I bought it off of eBay. I was looking for an Amtrak. So I went to the Amtrak website to look for a hat, and I was very disappointed in the hat. So I just did an eBay search, and I began eBay searching for like anniversary hats, and I found this hat from like the 90s on eBay, and in very good condition, so I bought it. My big thing on vegan food, we're not vegan over here, but my big thing is that like you don't have to be vegan. You can kind of veganize your meat eating. And what I mean by that, or just veganize your diet, is that there are like vegan things. First, I mean, there's always vegan meals you can make, whatever. But there are like vegan things that I actually think are like better than the equivalent like animal products. So for example, I bought this vegan kind of soul food book, one of Brian Terry's books. And he had, you know, he's like, you need to keep some cashew cream on hand. I'm like, what the fuck is cashew cream? It's just sort of like an emulsion of like soaked cashews in water. And he uses it as a substitute for like heavy cream. And I'll tell you what, cashew cream is a better substitute, is better than heavy cream, straight up, just like unambiguously. If you need something creamy in your food, creamy and fatty, cashew cream is superior. And moreover, you just buy a sack of raw cashews, keep them in your fridge or freezer, and when you need some, you know, soak them, and you blend them. And you have to have like a heavy duty blender for this. I've had a Vitamix for a long time, but like I use cashew cream, like especially when I'm making like northern Indian food, cashew cream goes in like everything. It adds creaminess and fat and fiber. It feels lighter, like it's just superior. Yeah, oat milk is better than milk. Like, it's better than milk for coffee. I'm trying to think of other things. Like, there are plenty of things that I just sort of like. I've just decided to use the vegan alternative, and it's like it's better. I keep lots of vegan egg substitute on hand for like making quick breads because like the eggs and quick breads are not, you know, whatever. You add a little more leavening, use some vegan egg substitute, it's fine. Hey, do that, John 555. No one's forcing you to be here. So the whole deal with this is I answer questions and kind of play. first time with what? Sacred Stones, though. So, in my memory, I played Sacred Stones when it came out many years ago, but I don't quite remember any of this. So, it's entirely possible that this is new to me. What were my first real jobs that led you to this current position? I always forget that for a lot of people, I kind of just popped out of nowhere. I've been a journalist since 2010. I graduated from the University of Virginia in 2009. My first job in journalism was American Prospect. My next job was at the Daily Beast. Then I was at Slate Magazine for almost five years. And I was chief political correspondent at Slate for 3 of those 5 years. And then I was at the Times. So I was in like journalism for almost a decade before I, 9 years before I got to the Times. Thank you. I've actually never eaten at Hamilton's in my life. It's a restaurant in Charlottesville. I feel like people don't know that I play games because they think I'm like 50 years old. But I'm not. I'm not that old. I mean, I'm 39. I'm like recently old. Thank you. It depends. I'm a kind of a restart the chapter gamer. I can't bear to let them die. I think my favorite Scream is Scream 3. Yeah, that sounds right. All right, guys, I need to call it quits. I'm getting kind of tired. Thank you for joining the stream. I know I kind of lost steam a bit there, but I was getting sleepy. Listen, here's the deal. My wife's back to work, and the kids are not in school yet, so I've been basically on single parent duty, but kind of like doing nonstop days with the kids from like 8 a.m. to like 4 p.m. and I'm exhausted. So, good night. See you guys next time. Thank you for joining the stream.